Hello and welcome to an episode of Everything is Canon, a Cinelinks podcast. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. However you may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. On this podcast, we invite authors from all genres onto the show to discuss their latest books and novels, as well as just about anything else that comes to mind. If you want to reach me, there are several ways to do so, but the best way is to email me at steve@cinelinks.com, or you can always find me on Twitter at SteveDunk5 or at EverythingCanon. Today in the show, I'm talking to Elizabeth Lim all about her new book, the first in a duology, Six Crimson Cranes, which is described as a princess in exile, a shape-shifting dragon, six enchanted cranes, and an unspeakable curse. Drawing from the wild swans and East Asian folklore, this breathtakingly original fantasy comes from the author of Spin the Dawn. Six Crimson Cranes is its stunningly beautiful cover come to life. It's an expansive magical mystery tour that will leave you spellbound and definitely wanting more. Which is great, because this is only the first book in a duology and ends in such a way that all endings should take note. Oh, and prepare yourselves for the awesome force that is Kiki. We talk about her contributions to the Disney Twisted Tale books and what's next, her incredible character work in Six Crimson Cranes, including the book's lead character Shiori, the connection this book has to her Spin the Dawn universe, and much, much more. While this is a spoiler-free discussion, the odd minor detail may slip out, so if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled at all, better stop listening now. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. As always, around these parts, we encourage supporting authors and stories that affirm the lives of people other than ourselves. Each time we engage in a conversation, whether it be online or face-to-face, now that we can do that again, or each time we participate in the market with our purchasing choices, this, of course, should be done all year long. And just because Pride Month is coming to an end on the Gregorian calendar doesn't mean we should stop being allies to the LGBTQIA+ community. So since July is a month, doesn't really have a predominant social media holiday that I'm aware of. Although July 30th is International Friendship Day, and that's a pretty cool one, let's keep the good times rolling and continue to support our friends in the LGBTQIA+ community in any which way you can. Okay, Elizabeth Lim grew up on a hearty staple of fairy tales, myths, and songs. Her passion for storytelling began around age 10 when she started writing fanfics for Sailor Moon, Sweet Valley, and Star Wars. All good things. I'm actually wearing a Star Wars shirt right now. And she posted them online hoping to be discovered. But after one of her teachers told her she had, too much voice in her essays, Elizabeth took a break from creative writing to focus on not flunking English. Quick pause for a second. You know, I don't know who this teacher is, but they need a good swift kick in the ass. Anyways, she would go on to graduate from Harvard in music and secondary in East Asian studies, and she completed her graduate degrees at the Juilliard School. Over the years, she's become a film and video game composer. But she always missed writing, and she turned to penning stories when she needed a breather from grad school and hasn't looked back. She's here today to talk about her new book, the first in a duology, Six Crimson Cranes, which is described as a princess in exile, a shape-shifting dragon, six enchanted cranes, and an unspeakable curse. Drawing from the wild swans and East Asian folklore, this breathtakingly original fantasy from the author of Spin the Dawn is perfect for fans of Leia Bardugo and Tori Amiati. Please welcome to the show Elizabeth Lim. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Steve. Thanks so much for having me. And so funny. I haven't read my bio in a while. And so, yeah, like, you just made me think of my teacher. She was my fifth grade teacher. She told me my essay sounded too conversational.
Well, I think I could safely speak for everyone when I say screw that teacher. Not all teachers. I mean, teachers are great. We love teachers. But what an awful thing to say to a creative young child. I don't know. All right. Isn't that crazy? I know you seem like a really nice person. You would never do this, but you should send them all your books in the mail and be like, well, see, good thing I didn't listen to you.
In a way, I kind of think that she helped me. Like, I guess nicely. At the time, my math was much better than my English. And she would just say, oh, you need like better vocabulary. You need to read like real books and not comics, which I still hate that she said that actually. That's a horrible thing, right? Yeah. And yeah, she's like, your essays have too much voice. You sound like you're talking to me. You're not supposed to be talking to me.
I see. So she was trying to keep you from failing a subject. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I guess we'll accept that. Begrudgingly.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'm glad it turned out the way that it did, obviously, because we have your wonderful books to enjoy. Everything. How are you? Doing good?
I'm good. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good.
What Star Wars shirt are you wearing?
Oh, it's just an original sort of just the Star Wars across the front, like the with the gold. You know, and what's the font called? I always forget. Anyways, that whatever the Star Wars font is, just black shirt, Star Wars. Yeah.
Nice. Classic.
I actually used to write for theforce.net. So I'm a huge, like, if we want to, we can talk Star Wars the whole time if you want. I'm currently.
We can. I read theforce.net like from middle school and I think there was no dictionary key. This is so nerdy and silly. But there was no like dictionary key for basic back then. And I think I used theforce.net's banner to figure out the letter for letter.
Yeah, that's the funny. Yeah, it's funny because I'm not with them anymore. Okay. You know, I wasn't with them at the very.
Well, I'm not in middle school anymore. So.
It's so funny though. I'd be at conventions and stuff, and this is what I would always get. It was sort of like cool, but kind of bum me out. They're like, "Oh, theforce.net. I used to go to that site all the time." You know what I mean? I'm like, "We're still around," but no, I've left them and moved on to other things. But just because I wanted to get away from just Star Wars because I like so many things, right? But if you could see where I'm sitting right now, I am in my basement, and it's wall-to-wall framed Star Wars posters of every shape, size, you can imagine.
I miss the expanded universe so much. Oh my gosh.
Well, that's what I started reading too, right? I'm 45 years old, so I've been with them the whole time. And,
nice. Okay.
I have I don't even know how many Star Wars books I've got, but a lot. Yeah. Yeah. So, well, that's cool. Have you kept with it? Have you stuck with Star Wars? Are you still watching?
I have not.
No.
After a certain character died in the expanded universe, I stopped. I don't know if you know which one I'm talking about.
You're talking about Chewbacca?
Yes. Yes.
When he got hit by a moon.
Yeah. I was like, okay, that's enough. I'm done.
You know, that was the, so getting real sort of like Star Wars, Lucasfilm-y, like when they formed, I guess technically reformed, but when Disney, you know, bought them and they decided to, you know, make canon and start the story group. Apparently one of the very first decisions they made was Chewbacca. Like undo that. Yeah.
I'm glad about that, I guess.
The expanded universe was kind of the Wild West, right? Like it was sort of anything goes type of thing. So they've, you know, I definitely, I like the, you know, canon and the current Star Wars stuff, not all of it, but I didn't like all the old stuff either. But
you can't love everything.
No. And I just really love the direction they're going in with some of the stuff. And
I agree.
The books especially. I mean, if you ever find some time, there's some new books out, especially the last couple of years, which have been really great. Well, that's cool. That's good. So I think probably without asking you, then, you know, I know we're somewhere in the same, we're the same generation anyway. So that's good. I'm a no bullshit person. I loved Six Crimson Cranes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Just flew through it. But, and we are going to talk a little bit about it. No spoilers, of course. But before we get to that, I'm also a fan of Disney Twisted Tales. I've had both Liz and Jen on the show before.
Oh, awesome.
And yeah. So, and they, of course, are great to talk to. And they're so complimentary of you and your work and each other. And you guys have a great, great trio there going there. It's a really great thing. And I didn't realize, I had to look it up because I hadn't heard anything about you in Disney in a while. And so you are doing another one. Doesn't come out till next year. Yeah. And you're looking at Pinocchio this time.
Yes, and we actually have a new sister joining the team.
Oh, I didn't hear
really
that either.
Excited for. I don't know that there's been an actual announcement, but I know that it's public. So Farah, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce her last name, but I believe it's Roshan, will be joining us, and she's going to do The Princess and the Frog.
Oh,
and
cool.
I'm just so excited. She seems lovely. I love Jen and Liz, and I'm sure I'm going to love Farah as well.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure they think of it's just the type of person they're bringing on board, right? Because all three of you are great and just obviously get along. And you can't,
we all love Disney.
You all love Disney. You can't mess that up, right? You can't mess up the mojo. So, well, that's cool. I'm looking forward to that. So yeah, you're doing Pinocchio. That comes out next year. All we've got so far is it says it will be based on the Blue Fairy from the 1940 classic. It'll be for a whole new story. That's all we know so far. I don't suppose you're allowed to say anything else about it at this point. It's probably too early, right?
Yeah, it's a little too early.
Yeah. Okay. I've asked, so you've done, so that'll be your third. You've done Cinderella and Mulan. So that's Reflection. And so this is Love. I've asked Liz and Jen this question, so I'll ask you the same thing. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of like this last few years, sort of the Disney revisionist stuff that's going on. And while Twisted Tales aren't really revisionist, but they definitely, you know, it's a kind of a what if scenario, right? Do you consider yourself a Disney purist? And do you like, you know, when people sort of mess with the originals?
I don't mind it. I don't think of myself as a purist. I think there's definitely always the classic films, but then there's so much room in in them to explore and expand. And I think just fairy tales in general are, fairy tales in general, traditionally, I think have been pretty short stories that are orally told often. And there's just like so much room to explore them and to like, to add more depth to their stories. And I think that's similar to what Disney is doing. Mm.
It's a really cool idea, and I really like these Twisted Tales a lot. I've read them all.
Yeah, me too.
They're a lot of fun to read. I've asked them this question too, and I'm not going to be able to remember what they said. I think Liz said Tarzan, but I think she said she wouldn't want to write it. She would want you or Jen to write it if it was Tarzan. Oh. But so I'll ask you though: is there any which characters are left that you'd like to take a shot at? Is there anybody you've got your eye on?
I don't think there's anyone I've got my eye on. I think like our series has been pretty thorough.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's been pretty thorough. So there's not that many left. Tarzan would be a lot of fun, but I feel like Tarzan is written by somebody else, so getting the rights might be tricky.
Right.
Let's see.
It's hard when you don't have a list in front of you either. I know it's not even a favorite.
Yeah.
Because it's like one of those things too, where you know, like I think. You know, Liz and I were just sitting there sort of like throwing names in the air. And then it's just before you know it, there is quite a few left that you don't, it's.
That's true. There's a lot of animal ones.
Yeah.
Like Robin Hood and Dumbo. Let's see, like The Fox and the Hound. I'm really going way back there, like Rescue Down Under.
That's right. Yeah. That's what I mean. And so it's once you start thinking about it, the floodgates sort of open. But, you know, but is if there's an interesting, you know, twist. Yeah.
I think Wreck-It Ralph or Big Hero 6 might be fun.
Yeah, that's the thing. It doesn't have to be a classic
anymore,
exactly. Right? You could do whatever you wanted. Yeah, for sure. And you know, one of the great things about these stories is they are pretty rich in lore and deep in character. So yeah, you can, there's so many different ways you can look at these stories, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Star Wars, one of the good things they do, I don't know, the couple books they've put out the last few years, it's called From a Certain Point of View.
Oh yeah. And I've seen the series. I haven't read it though.
Yeah. So, you know, the basic idea is they're anthologies and it's 40 authors and they're allowed to sort of pick somebody from the films, not one of the main characters, and tell a short story about them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it could be like a Wampa Wrangler or, you know, or whatever the case may be. And these books, you know, can sort of lean into that a little bit too, right? Like picking up on just a little cue or some subtext and sort of running with it in a way.
Yeah, it was really fun for me, especially in So This Is Love, to write from the prince's point of view, mm-hmm. for instance, like to get more of a sense of his character, because I think in the classic film, he only just sings that song and then disappears until the end.
Right. That's right. So you've got Pinot. I think I asked this them too. Are you love it? You love doing these? I assume as long as they want you, you're willing to.
Yes, of course. Yeah. I am a huge like Disney born and bred.
Right.
Yeah. So I love Disney. It was my dream to write for them. Well, I was a musician, so it was my dream to actually write songs for them. I wanted to write like Little Mermaid, Howard Ashman, and Alan Menken style songs for them.
Mm.
But then when I became a writer, it's just completely like been my dream, and I still like sometimes have to pinch myself.
Oh, that's cool. Well, that's great, because you don't, I mean, if it ever gets to a point where you're like, I don't want to do these, that's you know it's time to tap out, right?
Yeah.
So Six Crimson Cranes, there's a couple of interesting little things about it that I like other than the story. Number one, that's something I just found out the other day, that you've got Emily Wu Zeller doing the audio for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she did Reflection,
which is amazing. I'm not a huge audiobook person, but she, speaking of another Star Wars, she voiced Dr. Aphra in an audio drama by Sarah Kuhn that came out earlier this year.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And it's a full production, full cast, sound effects, the whole bit. And so she voiced Aphra, the lead character, and she was phenomenal. And again, I'm not an audiobook person, but I love those audio, but I'm starting to love the audio dramas for sure, especially if they're going to wrangle this type of talent. Like she's so great.
Yeah. Her voice is also like really soothing, which I love.
Right. So have you listened to it all or?
I haven't listened to it yet. But I heard bits from Reflection
right.
and was very impressed.
Will you listen to it?
It's actually really hard for me to listen to an audiobook of my own book. Because it's like, well, it's also hard for me to read my own book after it's been published, because I'll just mentally note these like things. I'm like, oh, I should have changed this. I should have rewritten this. Right. And then to hear somebody read the book, that's not my own inner voice. It just sounds weird to me.
That's my trouble historically with audiobooks, is when I read a book, I have an idea of what that character sounds like. And if it, and if it doesn't match that, or I, or even worse, I don't like it, then it just takes me right out of it.
So that's you should try it at some point.
Yeah. Listen, that's my problem. Like, I'm the crazy one, not these talented folks making these books.
I feel the exact same way.
Yeah. It'd be no different than like, if you read a book and you have an idea of what this person looks like, and then the book gets optioned into a TV show or a movie, and they cast somebody and you're like, well, that's not who I had in mind. Right. So it's similar to that, I suppose, but that's just my crazy brain. That's not, again, these talented folks behind the scenes doing this great work, they do great work. These audio folks are just magicians. It's pretty crazy the stuff they're able to do.
Yeah.
Another cool aspect of Six Crimson Cranes that I loved, and the letter to the reader. Is this just for the ARCs, or is this going to be in the final copy?
It's just in the ARCs.
Okay. So this is something that's happened a few times recently, and I've scolded the author about it. So I'm going to scold you. I love these letters. I'm a cover to cover person. I read everything inside the covers. So if you wrote it, I read everything. Acknowledgements, thank yous, letters to the readers, prologues, epilogue, like all of it. There's this thing went around like half a year ago where people were like asking if people read prologues. I'm like, of course you read the fucking prologue. Like, if you wrote,
of course.
It's part of the story. How could you? Anyways, that's a different. But I'm going to start getting angry again. But I love these letters to the readers, and I love that you put them at the beginning of the books. And it, you know, even though I'm supposed to feel special because it's directed towards me, the reviewer, the ARC holder, Justina Ireland did a really cool thing with Ophie's Ghosts a couple months ago, where she ended up just posting it online because it's such a beautiful letter, and it really talks about the amount of research that she put into that particular story. And I think that's important. That's context. That's like, I think it's really important. And this is you wrote a really beautiful letter at the beginning of this.
You.
Yeah, it's really emotional, and it really sets the tone, I think, in a beautiful way. And I think it's a great way to kick off these stories. And I'm going to ask that you please post it online.
I should do that. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I think I convinced Sasha and Serena and Nanua to do it for Sisters of the Snake as well. So it's just a beautiful letter, and I really think it should be out there for all readers to see it. And they're just so well done. So that's my two cents. You do with it what you will, but that's what I would ask you to do, because it is a beautiful letter, and I like that stuff. That's the process, right? I really enjoy process of authors, you know, where ideas came from, and you know, the work that you've put into it and how much it means to you. Cause that tells me more about, you know, more about you, and that's something I'm interested in. Obviously, I have a podcast where I talk to authors. So anyways.
Well, thank you for reading it. I'm inspired now to post it. So it's in my calendar.
Okay. Like I said, it's just a really cool thing, and it shouldn't just be for the bloggers and the reviewers who get these ARCs. I think it's important, and it should be for everyone who buys the book or is thinking about buying the book or whatever. So anyways, those are the two sort of side things. Yes. Excellent choice in the voice for the audio and letter to the reader. Please share it with the world, because it's amazing. Summary's kind of longish. Do you want me to read it, or do you want to practice? Do you have because you know you're going to get asked this, right? This is the number one question. So do you have something you'd like to practice, like a quick elevator version or?
Yeah, sure. I guess Six Crimson Cranes is a reimagining of the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale, The Wild Swans. And it's about a princess whose six brothers are turned into cranes. And I've woven in elements from East Asian folklore. One very astute reviewer likened it to having the magic of Miyazaki's film, The Spirited Away. Mm-hmm. And I just loved that. So I kind of think of it as The Wild Swans meets Spirited Away. There's dragons, there's flying paper birds, and lots of food and court intrigue. And it's a lot of fun.
If you say Spirited Away, those two words in any order, I'm in. So it's one of my favorite movies of all time, but, great. That's a great comp. Yeah. You can never go wrong with anything Studio Ghibli. Right. So,
yeah.
That's a really great sort of short version of it. it's a, you know, I think I referred to it as it's sort of like this, it's this amazing, it's the covers come to life. Let's talk about the cover for a second, because you must, I know authors typically don't have a lot to do with the covers. So did you have anything to do with this cover? And if you didn't, how stoked were you when you saw it?
I was really stoked. I don't get a ton of say in the cover.
Most don't.
Yeah. But I think originally we just originally had a different facial expression on Shiori mm-hmm. in the cover. And I wanted her to just look a little bit more fierce, I think. Well, not necessarily, fierce might not be the right word, but like determined, I mm-hmm. think. And that would be my only thing, that my main point in the cover notes. But I love the artist Tran Nguyen. She's just amazing. And like I've worked with her now on 3 books, Spin the Dawn, Unravel the Dusk, and now 6 Crimson Cranes. And I just hope that's the beginning of our collaboration. I'm just in love with her work.
It is so goddamn beautiful. I would like, if that was a print, you know what I mean? Like a full size 24x30x print, I would absolutely buy that and hang and frame it. It's so gorgeous. Shiori looks like perfect, right? I mean, mm-hmm. amazing. Like you said, that sort of like, determination, like, but, and then just the way that I'm looking at it, I'm just like, these fucking, the way the you know, the cranes are, it's just, and then
the way the cranes are situated around, like, the whole canvas is just amazing. There's so much movement, it's so dynamic. And I love Kiki.
I was just gonna say that you stole that, you stole my thunder. I was just gonna say, because like, I think I posted something like on Twitter when I first read it, I was like, wait till the world meets Kiki or something like that, something stupid.
Yeah, but I love Kiki.
Kiki is a force. But a little Kiki there in the front. Let's maybe explain who Kiki is before people might, just so they know what we're talking about.
So Kiki is a flying paper bird, specifically a crane, since Shiori's family crest is a crane. And she's brought to life by Shuri's magic, and she ends up becoming Shuri's best friend, her sidekick. She's got a lot to say, so she's full of advice and opinions and energy. And I think she's probably my favorite character.
She is hands down my favorite character in this book. Yep. She is definitely full of opinions. She's the levity too, right? I mean, there's a lot of serious shit going on in this book, and
exactly,
and she's the levity. Like, she, you know, is really great at easing the tension in when things get too tense, and she is without a doubt, like, she always, I mean, she's close with her brothers for sure, but Kiki's her mm-hmm. best friend and is with her through thick and thin, and they're together for other reasons too, important reasons, which I won't say here, but they're just, that's them, that's the team, right? And they go through it all together, and it's so great. And even at the this is a duology, there's two books. I don't think it's much of a spoiler to say that Kiki survives to the end of this book anyways. And even at the end, right, there's that great moment at the end, you know, with Kiki. It's so funny and really great. I loved Kiki.
Thanks.
This book I described as sort of like this expansive magical mystery tour in a way. It'll definitely leave you sort of wanting more. And, talk about, it's a duology. Did you query it as a duology, or was it maybe a trilogy at first, or what was the idea?
So I actually wrote a prequel to 6 Crimson Cranes before I began working on 6 Crimson Cranes.
Okay.
I won't go into it too much because I'm not sure whether or not my editor is going to accept it. I basically wrote a prequel to 6 Crimson Cranes, and then I knew that I wanted to start Shiori's story. And pretty early on, I knew I wanted to make a duology, just having written Spin the Dawn and that experience of having, of needing 2 books, I think, from early on, as I was working on my outline, I was like, oh, I need 2 books for this.
Okay. And a lot of times, did the ending write itself? Did you start with an ending and work your way backwards? Like, and I mean the ending of the whole thing.
I like to know, the first book was easier to plan the ending because I mostly followed the fairy tale, the original fairy tale.
I see.
Many changes, but that gave me the general direction of the story.
Right.
Sequels are always trickier for me because that's when the the marriage, I guess, or the alliance to the original fairy tale ends, and I'm off on my own.
Right.
So I won't spoil anything about the sequel, but the ending there, I didn't really figure out until halfway then when I was writing it.
Writing the second book.
Yeah, writing the second book, but I'm happy with it now, and I hope readers like it too.
I was going to ask you if you're happy. You know, you have to be happy with it. This is, at the end of the day, if you like, it doesn't matter what happens. If you're not happy with it, then it doesn't really matter, right? So
yeah.
So that's good. You're happy. It's, you know, you're satisfied with the way it turned out, and that's good to hear, because you know, you came up with it, like you said, didn't come up with it, but it sort of formed, you know, halfway through writing the second book. So that's pretty late in the game. I mean, that's a book and a half in, right? And
that's pretty late for me. I mean, I always knew the general idea of what was supposed to happen in the end, but the execution of it, I think I didn't quite grasp until I was halfway through writing.
Well, that's very cool. I mean, I wish I had it now. So I know how these things work. When I have to wait a whole friggin' year, but
yeah, I think only two people have it right now.
Okay. Right on. Are they sort of like beta readers for you? Is that?
Oh, no. Just like two people in my imprint, like my editor and her assistant have it. They're the only ones. My agent too, I guess.
Okay. Do you like to give your books to any friends or any fellow authors to look at?
You know, as I've become a bit more experienced as an author, my circle of critique partners has shrunk a lot. I would say only I have a small circle of maybe about six writing friends and close friends that I share my work with.
Okay.
My husband is a very, very thorough and constructive reader. So he does the brunt of the work, I'd say.
Okay. Well, as long as you trust that they can be honest. I mean, that's really that's the bottom line, right?
These are people who've read like all of my books from before I got published, from when I was like facing dozens and dozens of rejections every month. So, so I trust them. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's what it is. Whether it's husband, you know, cousin, friend, trust is the key thing there, right? Because it doesn't do you any good for them to fucking lie to you about it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, is it bad? I want to know. Tell me right now.
Right. Or don't tell me how great it is, even if you don't think it is, right? Like, it doesn't, that is pointless. Yeah. So, well, that's really cool. Yeah. No, I'm in for sure. Are you, when as a reader, do you like standalones or series?
I don't mind either, honestly. I feel like I probably read both in equal amounts.
Right.
I am really bad about finishing series, though, I will
say. Are you?
Yeah.
I'm nutso when it comes to like closure, but I can't.
Okay.
So like, I'm with you. I read lots of both. I'm fine with both, but I'm nuts about, especially when I really enjoy something or obsess over it. It's like, I need it. I waiting that year between kills me.
Okay.
Right?
Well, as a writer, I'm very happy to hear that. And I'm grateful for readers like you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, it's the next year waiting for, you know, I wrote it. What did I call it? I think I called it Six Crimson Cranes 2, Even More Cranes. That's what I'm just calling it. It's not the title, by the way, anyone listening. It's not the title. Waiting for Even More Cranes. It's going to be a tough wait for me. It's just, I wish I had the patience to wait till both were out. You know what I mean? And then pick them up. But I can't do that. There's no way I can do that. So I'm just stuck in misery is basically what it boils down to. But I do like standalones just from the one and done closure part of it, of my brain, right? Like,
yeah.
I can just get on with my life instead of obsessing over Shiori now for the next 12 months. So one of the cool things too about this duology is it sort of, explain to readers without spoilers, if you can, how this book, Six Crimson Cranes and the Spin the Dawn universe are connected, because it's,
Okay, yeah, there's a lot of Easter eggs, but Six Crimson Cranes is set in the same universe as Spin the Dawn. You can read it without having read Spin the Dawn, no problem. Mm-hmm. But if you have read Spin the Dawn, you might notice some Easter eggs in the book, like mentions of a few characters that were in the original duology. Six Crimson Cranes is set a few hundred years earlier, so... And it's in a different country, but there are similar locations mentioned, and there will be a lot more in book two. So I can't say too much, but be prepared, and I think readers will be excited.
Oh, that's cool. So it takes place so much longer before. Don't if anyone, if anyone, don't expect to see Maya in.
Show. No, she hasn't been born. She hasn't been born.
Both, I mean, both characters, Shiori and Maya. Obviously, I think the differences and the similarities are obvious, but you know, at their core, I just found them to be just really good, people.
I would want to be friends with them, you know?
Yeah. Like, do you think they'd be friends with each other?
I think so. I think Maya might be, it depends on which phase of Shiori.
True enough. And Maya too.
Yeah. And Maya too.
Right. They both have a pre and a post, right? Like as far as events, certain events that happen to them. Yeah.
But I think they would be friends as long as Maya doesn't ask Shiori to sew with her. And they'd be okay.
it's advertised as such. So this was inspired by the Wild Swans, the Hans Christian Andersen story way back when. And then, it's a mix though. And like you said, it's got some, mm-hmm. Spirited Away and a lot of East Asian folktale stuff. This retelling sort of like this thing, you seem to enjoy it.
Yeah, I really do love it. I think, I grew up reading fairy tales. I grew up loving Disney. And my dad, like when we would go, he would take me to San Francisco on the weekends to study piano. And like, we would get stuck in traffic a lot. I grew up in California Bay Area. So we would get stuck going to San Francisco a lot. And to pass the time, I guess, because we didn't have like iPhones and everything back then, he would tell me these stories from around the world that he picked up. Like he also read a lot of, I think, like comics too, and he would tell some of the stories. I think they were based on Neil Gaiman's series, like The Shadow Man, think, something like that. Okay. Yeah, he would tell a lot of these stories to me, and like some of them just really stuck, and I ended up loving them and like seeking out more versions and animations of them. And like even as an adult, I remember them really clearly, and I think that love just inspires a lot of my writing. So it's been a joy to really reimagine some of these tales from my childhood, and hopefully other readers will find them and love them as well. That's been my hope.
So when you were growing up, you were spent time, walk me through quickly through your timeline, because you Northern California and Japan and Tokyo, right?
Yeah.
So how much time did you spend in either, or was it just constant going back and forth?
So I grew up mostly in California, but my parents moved to Japan for 3 years when I was in high school.
Okay.
So, and then I went to college. So,
in California or in the States? In the States.
I went to college in the States.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you never moved to Japan yourself?
No, I did. I went to high school in Japan.
Sorry, you went to high school in Japan. Okay. Yeah. And then came back to the States for college.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever want to stay in Japan for college or anything like that, or no?
No, my Japanese, I would never survive.
It'd be good by now, I probably though. Yeah. Where in Northern California did you live?
I lived in like 45 minutes east of San Francisco in the East Bay.
Okay. Yeah. I in my younger days, I lived in Capitola. For a few years. Just outside of Santa Cruz County there. So I'm a huge fan of Northern California and that area.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really nice. Okay, so I'm just trying to sort of, you know, see how much influence you had for, you know, like you said, East Asian folktales, and it sounds like, between your parents and,
My family is pretty traditional, regarding culture and like food and everything. I grew up eating Chinese food and East Asian food pretty much every day for dinner. I go to my grandma's house, and my grandmother really believes that the like Chinese gods and immortals are real.
Nice.
So she would tell me those stories when I was little, and like, just like, oh, they're watching you. Like you have to pray to them. So
I love grandma. That's great. That'd be fun. That'd be super fun. And that,
she's really superstitious.
Yeah, that's cool. That makes for great storytelling, though.
Yeah. So I think I picked up a lot from them, and I think probably when I was a kid, I didn't appreciate it as much. But
right, it was it just like embarrassing? Maybe when you had friends around or anything like that.
It wasn't really embarrassing. I think it was just I think the superstitiousness could just be a little like a little much sometimes. You'd be like, oh, don't buy like four oranges or like anything in fours and stuff. So it's just like a lot of little things. But, you know, now that I'm grown up, you know, I appreciate it because it's like a touch of culture and tradition.
Yeah. It's like it's old world meets new. We don't want to lose that, right?
Exactly.
That connected to it. You can, of course, like, you know, apply, pick and choose the things you want to, like, you know, continue to like the four orange thing or whatever, right? But but understanding and appreciating the past, and that's super important. And as technology gets nuttier and nuttier, we got to just maybe fight a little harder to hang on to certain things, right?
Like, yeah, I think so. And technology has also helped though, because, you know, when I was growing up, I thought I was the only one who had these superstitions that I had to grow up with, like don't wash your hair on your birthday or like don't wear white on such and such days, no white flowers. And then like through the internet, I'm like, oh, there's a lot of other people who grew up with the same things. And so
yeah,
that's been nice.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was just talking to Daniel Jose Older the other day and we were talking about, you know, how Twitter is both like an incredible, amazing thing that connects the world and people, but then it's also a shithole and a hellscape. And it's you know, it's such a strange combination of, you know, heaven and hell, right? Like it's such a weird, So it's a crazy thing, but that's true. I mean, like without Twitter and stuff like that, I mean, there's so many, like I said, it's connected me to, like authors are my favorite people, and it's connected me to so many of them, and a couple I've, you know, become friends with, and it's awesome. It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes the world smaller, for better or for worse.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Yeah. this isn't a spoiler. It says so in the main summary sort of about, the brothers, Shiori's six brothers are turned into cranes, six crimson, crimson cranes, right? It's even the title of the book. so the six brothers are all, you do a really great job because, you know, this whole cast is great. And I think you do a really great job of giving us a good sense of each person in the book. Kind of, you spend just enough time with them, let us know who they are, their traits, their characteristics, stuff like that. So, you know, the brothers who aren't in the book, you know, they're only in about a third of the book, I guess, maybe even a quarter, right? But I feel like I know them all. Like I know.
Thank you.
Yeah, like Benkei's the commander, and you know Hasho is the youngest one, but he's not the heir to the, you know, Andahei's the heir to the throne. Yotan and Rechi are, you know, the sort of like the bratty ones, and you get a real good sense of who they are and what they are. And you know, this is a big cast, though. Like, talk about sort of the challenges of putting together a big cast.
Yeah, that is that was definitely one of the challenges in writing this book. I don't consider myself good at writing big casts, but it's something I wanted to challenge myself with in this book. Like in Spin the Dawn, for the first like third of the book, I have the competition and there's the 12 tailors. And that for me was the big cast, but Maya doesn't really interact with all of them at once. And they quickly get eliminated. So the big cast quickly became a small cast. So I didn't have to work with a big cast for a long time in Spin the Dawn. But here, with Shuri and her six brothers, like they're a family and they're a unit. And for a lot of the time, they are together. So that was something that I knew I needed to tackle. And it was really important for me to give the brothers distinctive personalities, but also give them depth so that they're not described as just, you know, like Reiji being the selfish one or something. And to have a little bit more depth than that.
Yeah. And they do, like, just cause you know, the things I just said is just like one part of each of them. It's not,
I understand. Yeah. That's how I was thinking when I was writing. Yeah. That was a challenge, and I'm glad that I did it. I'm glad I didn't shy away and just like, or just make them go away somewhere.
Because I mean, you could have just made them full crane.
Yeah, and not be able to communicate at all.
yeah, for sure. So no, the things you did with them, and you know, and how. You know, I guess this is not really a spoiler, but they're cranes some of the time and sometimes they're not. So, but you know, the rules for them and, you know, the conditions in which they are cranes and not cranes and the things they have to do and abide by, really cool, really interesting, really great
stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really, really cool. Don't want to keep you too much longer here, but I'm not going to say there's a triangle, but there's two suitors. Maybe I'll say suitors for lack of a better word.
Okay.
It's much more clear cut when you read the book, but Shiori has a lot of fans. Let's put it that way. A lot of people like her in the book, and I'm just curious about one of them is Takan and one of them is Ziru. Am I saying that right? Mm-hmm.
Takan and Ziru, yeah.
Yep. Okay. So one is her. This is not a spoiler at all. One's her betrothed, right? Mm-hmm. And one is a dragon. So yes. It's kind of
they're
like
pretty different.
They're pretty different, but God damn it, they're both handsome, aren't they? in their own ways, for sure. Yeah. Who would you take? Who do you like?
Who would I take?
Yeah.
The answer is so clear for me. I don't want to answer it because I feel like then
you don't want to turn off some of your readers. Okay.
Yeah.
I think I'm team dragon. I think I'm team
okay.
Dragon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ziru is a lot of fun.
He is a lot of fun. Yeah. And there are no, these two, like usually sometimes in, we'll see what happens in book two, I guess, but and although Ziru has like, can get a little, annoyed, I guess is like one way to put it with humans. He's not a bad guy, not yet anyways. And Takan's not a bad guy, not yet anyways. So they're both really, really great dudes and good options, I think, for Shiori.
Thank you. Yeah.
She has a clear, I think, favorite at this point. Won't say who, but.
Yeah, it could change though. You never know.
It can change. Yeah. But talk about the, you know, I don't want to get you out of here without talking about the dragons because they are such a big part of this book. Talk a little bit about sort of putting dragons into a story that's already full of magic and wonder, and then the dragons just take it to a whole nother level, right?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I don't. They just kind of came to me. I knew when I wanted to reimagine the Wild Swans story. There obviously are no dragons in
right.
the original story, yeah, that's right. And I don't know why I thought about writing dragons into it because it's a book about birds. So why dragons? I don't really know, but it just felt right at the time.
Yeah.
And I always loved like Chinese dragon folklore. And like a lot of it, there's no like set mythology on Chinese dragons. So it's like, hey, you know, there's a lot of room for me to write my own interpretation of these stories that I loved. And like, hey, why not have like a dragon prince who comes up and saves Shiori and they become friends. And I thought it'd be a really cool way, especially to begin the book and to set the magic in this world. Mm-hmm. I just was very instinctive to put dragons. I don't really have an explanation for it.
No,
it's
really cool. And like I said, there's some stuff, it's really tough to get too deep on this without spoilers, but you know, they play such an important role in keeping balance, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Kyoto, in this land, in the kingdom, and all, even this, everywhere, really, not just Kyoto, but the surrounding areas as well. They play such an important role in balance. And, you know, just, I think by just saying the word balance, people will understand that there's, you know, two sides to balance and, you know, mm-hmm. and good and bad, right? So,
yeah.
And the dragons.
And I also,
sorry.
Go
ahead.
I was just going to say, I grew up like loving the Western dragons, medieval dragons, knights, slaying dragons, etc. But
yeah.
I just haven't seen that much like East Asian dragon folklore and fantasy. And so I wanted to contribute my small part to that and show like dragons that are not meant to be slain by knights. You know, they're like these mythical creatures who are wise and angry and mercurial. So that was my take on it.
It's really cool, like I said, and you know, what, it'll make much more sense to people listening when they read the book. They're big dragons are just old as well, so they're pretty cranky. But
mm-hmm. yeah,
you know,
cranky dragons. I love cranky dragons.
Yeah, they are great, and I think they got a good reason to be. You know what I mean? It's an interesting relationship they have with humans, and it's something you don't fully explore. It looks like you probably will in the second book, but
I'll explore more, but yeah. I think it's something that has a lot of room for development, like even beyond.
There's a lot of, that's the thing too, you there's a lot of history in this world that you're writing mm-hmm. currently, and that goes back a long way, and you do such a great job of like sort of like keeping this story progressing at a nice rate, right? Because this is the story we're reading, but at the same time implying, you know, the history that's there, right? And having proper mm-hmm. respect, having a good mm-hmm. respect for it. It's pretty, pretty cool. So you can't have a duology without an interesting lead. Shiori's great. She's such a great lead character. She's all the things you want her to be, fallible, strong, courageous, weak in some instances, you know, it's, but just relies on all her cunning and her strengths at just the right time. And I mean, she spends the entire second act of this book almost like alone and a prisoner, right?
So
like, yes, and a prisoner in a lot of ways too, right? It trapped and a prisoner metaphorically and physically sometimes. Like she's got a tough go, and you know, it only makes her stronger. And she's such a great character.
Oh, thank you. She's my favorite so far, I think.
She's super great. I mean, she's like if it wasn't for Kiki and Rikama, am I saying that right?
Oh yeah. I love them too. I have a lot of favorites. Okay.
Yeah. Well, you wrote it. You should. Yeah. I can't say anything about Rikama about why she's my favorite character, but she's my favorite character.
Okay. I'm glad to hear you say so. I spent a lot of time developing her character, a lot. So that means a lot.
I hope this isn't a spoiler, but I don't know if anyone's read Ray Bear from last year.
Oh, I haven't read it yet. Jordan Afuqo's. I've heard so many good things, though.
There's a character in that book called The Lady. That's what she goes by. That's her name. And she was my favorite character in all of publishing last year. So that's if anybody wants to go and buy and read that book, that might give you a little bit of an idea of what Rikami's about. But not the books aren't similar in any way whatsoever. I'm not implying that. I'm just and they're both equally great. But there's just something about this certain type of character. And I just mean as an archetype that.
I'm glad to hear
really
that.
Really gets me going. me excited.
I love that. Yeah.
So
I love her too.
So that's like probably my top three. It's Kiki, Rikami, and Shiori are probably my top three favorite characters. So again, just really, really fantastic job, Elizabeth. Holy shit, there's a scene at the end that I cried and cried and cried. I think you know which one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It was so emotional and so great. And the payoff on that scene, you just build it and the characters earn that moment and you make us earn it. And it's such a great moment. And I wasn't expecting to cry reading Six Crimson Cranes. I'm telling you, I'm like fantasy with dragons and cranes. Yeah. What could go wrong? And I'm just like, by the end on that scene, I was like, it's so great. And this ending of this book is like, should be taught in schools. It's perfect. It's amazing. It's cinematic. That's the great thing about it too. This book could be a movie, and I could just picture that end. And it's not even the end. It's the interlude essentially. But it's so great. So I'm so happy for you. I know people are gonna love it. It comes out July 6th.
I hope so.
Anyone can go to your website, elizabethlim.com, to find out about any events you've got, right? Launch events going on. I'm sure you'll
have launch events on the 6th, 7th, and 8th.
Okay. So we'll make sure people go to elizabethlim.com to find out about all of that, any exclusive offers, anything cool like that going on. So elizabethlim.com. Thank you so much. I won't talk to you before the release. Have a great release. You know how this goes. You know you're not going to get any sleep the night before. but it's a long week for you guys. Have a great release week, Elizabeth. And
thank you so much, Steve. This was a pleasure. Yeah, the 45 minutes went by really fast.
It does. I know.
Thank you. You're great.
Thanks so much for coming on. And best of luck with the launch. There you have it. Another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. Huge thanks to Elizabeth for taking the time to speak with me. I had a great time talking all things Cranes and even a bit of Star Wars as well. Six Crimson Cranes is a fantastic start to this duology, and I can't wait to read book two. So definitely you want to get in on this series now. Six Crimson Cranes is out now, so head on over to elizabethlim.com to order a copy today. As always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen, and head on over to cinelinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Please continue to be safe out there. Bye for now.